was a singer, and it's actually one of the ways that I worked my way through college. I would literally sing the national anthem at games. I would get money that way, and then I would wash the uniforms after.
Hey, hi there. I'm Cammy Chaos.
And I am Rick Tarosi, and we, as you know, are mildly interesting people. That's why we work hard every week to find somebody far more interesting than us to join us on the show so we can talk about some very interesting things. Cammy, who is our guest this week?
So this person is one of the humans that we identified very early on season one on my list of people that I was like, we need to have this person on the show. Why? Because she's one of the most interesting people that I know. That's why. There is no conversation that one cannot have with her. There is no topic about which she does not have a feeling that she is going to share with you. And there is not a human on this earth that is a decent human that she is not willing to like go to the mat for and like completely support and love. And it's one of the things I love most about her. Also, she loves animals. Also, she's wicked funny. Also, she's like sassy as all hell. And you just really want her to feed you. So everyone, please welcome my good friend, Jody Fiorenza. And I'm going to note that I said the right last name.
Oh, yeah, you did an amazing job. That was perfect.
Jody,
I'm so excited to be here.
Welcome, Jody.
Yes, this is very cool. I have been loving season one, so very Thank excited you. To see what comes out of season Thank two for y'all.
Thank you.
You
kind of do what we do. You talk to people, and I find it interesting. And I want you to tell me. So to be very specific, Jody has been doing a series of conversations with friends, like deep conversations with friends that she's been sharing on Instagram lately. Where else are you sharing them? Tell us about those conversations and what are you doing with it?
Yeah. So there was a couple of things that led up to me wanting to do this. One, I was just feeling a little lack of inspiration in my own life. And I found myself going to places like TikTok or Instagram and looking at what other people are doing. And it occurred to me, because you know that saying, you're the average of the five people that you are closest to, which whether or not that is accurate or not, the saying itself is very interesting. And I thought, why do I keep looking for these external sources to give me inspiration when I am literally surrounded by some of the most amazing people on the planet? Why don't I just reach out to them? Because they're right here. They're my friends. They all have these really cool stories. Maybe I can find some inspiration here. So at first, the motive was a little selfish. I was feeling lost and I wasn't quite sure how to kind of get that spark back. And then I started talking to my friends closer and more and just kind of learning about what they were doing. And I thought this could really benefit a lot of people because these are normal, everyday people just doing really amazing things. And they all have this backstory that we don't all have privilege to. And so I started asking like, hey, if I interviewed you for like 5 minutes, would you be interested in talking online? And most people said yes. And so I just started doing it. And I knew for myself, there needed to be a very like low barrier of entry. Because if I made it too complicated, it probably wasn't going to get done. So I said, all right, I'll put them on Instagram. Maybe TikTok, low budget, just do Zoom calls with folks, have a conversation with them, keep it short and see what happens. And so I'm a few in now. So you can find them on Instagram and TikTok. And that's really how it started. It was just, I needed to find something creative again to do. And so I looked at my circle and they're the best people in the world. So I just wanted to start talking to them.
So I have to say, you're the only person I know who would start a project off like this by saying, I'm going to talk to my ex-husband. There's a lot of heartbreak and trauma in our relationship. Yeah. Caused some problems.
Yeah.
Let's record a conversation with him.
That sounds like fun.
That's not something I would do. It is something that you did and something that was amazing.
Yeah.
Tell me what the fuck you were thinking.
Yeah, that's a great question. So my ex-husband and I were together 13 years. We divorced in 2019, right before the pandemic. So it was like the universe said, I am going to force you to heal because I am going to lock you away after your divorce and not let you have access to people, which was probably the best thing that could have happened to me at the time, honestly. Not that the pandemic was a good thing by any means, but having to self-isolate to go through that healing process of my divorce was really impactful for me. And I'll never not appreciate that time I had to do that. Modern day divorces are funny. I have two dogs, which will probably come up a lot in this conversation. And they are actually written into my divorce agreement. So in my divorce agreement, he has visitation of the dogs every weekend. And I see him often. And so we chat, we talk because we do the dog exchange on the weekends. And so when I had this idea, I thought relationships are something that everyone wants to talk about. And I asked myself, have I fully resolved my past relationships? So maybe he is a good person to talk to first. What did we learn as a couple coming out of 13 years going into a divorce? And what information can we share about that that would be helpful? And when I asked him, I thought he would say, no way. No way am I doing this. I was shocked when he agreed to do it. And I did the interview with him and I came out of it learning some things that I did not know going into it. And he did not know what I was going to ask. And I'll tell you, for me, the hardest one to hear, although I knew it, it was one of those things like you know intuitively, but when you hear it, it was really hard. I'm 8 years older than him. And I asked him, I said, when we started dating, I asked you if the age issue was going to be a thing. And you said, no. I said, do you feel that the age difference was a factor? And he immediately said, yes. And I am not going to lie. I just went like, oh, like I knew that to be true. And so that was new information. And I don't think I knew how much he struggled post-divorce to heal either. He had mentioned mental health resources that he used. I had no idea he had been reaching out for help. And that, I think, was a huge thing for me to hear, that he really did want to heal, that he really put in some work to heal. So a lot came out of that conversation. And so many people messaged me and said, I wish that I could get to that point with my ex. And I would not say we're best friends. I would simply say that we're able to have a conversation about some of the mistakes we admittedly both made and how we grew out of that and got to where we are now.
So there's an interesting subtext here that I want to draw out. And it is, we talk about like people creating content on a consistent basis, typing into keyboards at one another, taking photos and sharing those online, often pretending we're talking to someone when we're really just staring at a little camera and there's no feedback there. Talk to us about the power of having an actual conversation with somebody, be it face-to-face or online. Like, how does that change the dynamic of what's shared, what kind of information is created? Like, what is the power of conversation, in your opinion?
That is such a great question, because I've actually been thinking a lot about this. One of the things I consciously wanted to do when I was talking to people was be the listener. I'm the youngest of four girls. I'm a Gemini. I'm Italian, and I live in Philadelphia. If there's one thing I can do, it is talk. And I talk a lot. So for me, this was an exercise in, this is not your platform right now. You are opening up this platform for whoever you're talking to. So you listen. Let them talk. So one of the things I have to actively work on is not to insert my opinion. I am simply listening to what that person is saying and engaging in that conversation. And I'll tell you that I don't think I do that enough in my everyday life. I don't think that in everyday conversations, I'm always giving people the opportunity to talk freely without me trying to change their opinion, interject, stop a thought, or, you know, add my own thoughts into it. And that is one of the most interesting things that has come out of this. While it is a conversation and I'm certainly contributing, it really is a platform for that person to talk. And I've loved that, because if you do stop sometimes which I'm learning, and actually listen to what people are saying to you, there's so much to be learned. And I'm, Cammy said it very nicely. She said sassy. I'm also slightly argumentative at times. And I know that about myself. And so this is an exercise in active listening for me as well. So these conversations have been shaped around me not being the star or the talker or the one that is trying to give my thoughts. These conversations are around me saying, I need your help. What do you have for me? And I love that part of it. And also, like, you know, you think about one of the things that I thought about a lot this summer was just that I think coming out of this pandemic, our close interpersonal relationships with the people around us, the dynamics of those changed so considerably. And I want to be a better friend. I want to be a better human to the people that have done so much for me. And I've been thinking about that a lot. How can I be a better friend to people? Because, you know, everybody, we talked about this. One of my friends, Jenna, who I did an interview with, we were talking about how friends show up differently. Some people will show up at your door. Some will bring a bottle of booze. Some will bake. Some will call you. Some will text you. And none of those things are better than the other. It's just that people show up differently. They show up how they know how to show up. And I'm starting to pay attention to that more, because somebody who maybe just texts but doesn't actually come in person, it means that they're making an effort in the way that they know how to make an effort. And I should be recognizing that as a friend too. And how do I show up better for people? Because I'll bake, I'll bring booze, I'll do all of those things, but I need to do more of it to say thank you and be appreciative and just help and support those folks around me. We need it right now, right? It is. It could be a lonely world. And so
everybody needs it.
Everybody needs it.
I'm interested. So you're asking these questions, you're having these conversations, you're obviously personally gaining a lot from it. I also, as much as I love to and strive to active listen, I'm very opinionated as well.
Opinionated is a much better word than aggressive, which I think is the word you use. Yes, opinionated. I love that.
Opinionated. I'm opinionated. I'm curious, when you are in the moment, when you're recording the conversations, is that when you're getting the active listening? Or for me, sometimes I will listen to conversations that I have with people after the fact. And it's when my chance to talk is not even present that I am often able to do my best listening, which is flaw on my part. I'm like, but I could share. I could be a part of the conversation, which I'm doing right now. When do you get that good listening doing? Like, what do you know what I'm saying? Are you hearing it in the moment or are you hearing it after the fact?
Well, I'm definitely doing it in the moment because I want to be able to respond accordingly. So this is actually, you know, I'm in my late 40s. When I was in school, I promise there's a point to what I'm going to say, and it will be ironic when I actually say it. When I was in school, if you struggled learning, you were either put in the gifted class or the not gifted class. That was it. You had two options. That was all that there was. There was very few conversations about ADHD, any of those maybe learning challenged things that we might face as a kid. Dyslexia, we didn't talk about that stuff. I grew up in a very small coal mining town in Northeast PA. We literally played in what was called the strip-ins, which were the abandoned coal mines. I mean, I'm talking a small town, right? So as I got older, although I've not been professionally diagnosed, I definitely see that I have some of these things, these symptoms of what could be ADHD, right? And I actually plan to go see a specialist and get tested to find out if what I'm feeling might be, in fact, accurate. And the reason I say this is because when I'm in the midst of a conversation, sometimes my mind literally exits completely. And I am very aware that that person is talking to me, but I am like in Iceland somewhere, and I have to force myself to come back to the conversation. So this is something I've been doing a lot. Can I focus on the words that are being said right now as I'm speaking to this person to, you know, understand, truly understand, and internalize the information that they're sharing with me. And I've been working on that. But the beauty comes out in the editing process, because that's when I am like determining, what do I think is really important for everybody to hear? And let me just cut myself out as much as possible. Because again, it's really about this person. And so that's also an act of, I think, killing the ego a little bit, which I don't know how else to put that. It's like, yes, I'm kind of facilitating these conversations, but I'm not important in them. And just accepting that and understanding that the person you're speaking to, this is their moment to share everything. So I've been like cutting myself out. And all of those little, what seem like very innocent things that you start to do, you realize what a change it makes in yourself. When you can step back for a moment and just say, I am going to hear this person. I am going to internalize what this person is saying. So it starts during the actual conversation itself. But really, until that final version, there is something happening where I'm understanding more and more of what they're contributing.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up editing, because it's, so I've edited the written word for 30 odd years or so, and always strive to, and hopefully Cammy will reinforce this, always strive to make the person doing the writing be a better version of that person, or help them communicate the way that they communicate more effectively. And I never expected that from the video editing process, but I've discovered that it's very similar, that just because someone said something in a particular order chronologically, you as the editor can hear the story they're trying to tell, and your creative hand comes into play as you're editing that conversation. How do you balance that? Like, this is what I'm hearing versus this is what I think the person's trying to say. Like, has that been challenging for you in trying to craft these conversations?
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to be very conscious of that. Again, it's not my voice, right? So I have been sending drafts after I edit and encouraging the guests to listen to them and just getting their final send-off before I post it live, because I want to make sure that I'm capturing exactly what it is that they're trying to say. And I will continue to do that, because I think that that's important. They have a very specific message that they're trying to get out, and I'm simply trying to help that message get out. And so there are times when I edit things out where I think they may have thought that this was important. Am I doing the right thing? And so I've even been communicating and saying, hey, you mentioned this. On a scale of like 1 to 10, how much does this need to be in this conversation? Because the other thing I'm trying to do is keep them short purposefully. I want to be able to post them on social media. Somebody said, start a YouTube channel, do all these things. And again, for me, I know if I complicate this process right now, it will die in the graveyard of things started that Jody never finished. And I'm trying to clear that graveyard out right now, because there's a lot. There's a lot there. So I'm trying to do this for myself in a way that I know that I'll be excited about it and carry it through. And so keeping them short allows me to post them to social media really easily. And so that's been an important factor too.
Cool.
I want to circle back to something that Rick said and to something that is active for Jody. And as Rick said, I've been on the receiving end of some editing. The pieces of writing that I look at and read and feel are the most authentic to my voice are pieces that were well edited by someone in this room. They are something that, like, I wrote something and there were parts of it that I was like, this is really important. And then to see them cut out, I'm like, that was completely useless. I don't know why was that there in the first place. And so to have someone who has the skill, it is a honed skill. I mean, I'm sure there's a natural talent for it, but like the amount of work that you have to do as an editor to recognize someone's voice and to keep all of the threads in line, either in writing or on video, and allow them to communicate what it is that they're saying is really a gift I don't have. And it's fucking magical. And I love that you're doing that, Jody. I love that you're seeing that. And I love hearing that you're having the exchange with people after the fact. And just folks, you, hey, if you don't know, writers, performers, not just magically talented. I mean, some of them are, but like, there's a lot of editing. There's a lot of like, let's take that out. Let's put this in. Let's make this, let's chop up the order. There's a lot of behind the scenes work that goes into making a perfect moment. And hearing from people who curate that is pretty special.
The funny part of all of this is that in college, I studied broadcasting and interpersonal communications. That was my major. Huh. And weirdly enough, it has come full circle, I think, in what I'm doing right now, which I never really expected to happen because I work in an industry so far removed from all of that, right?
Yeah.
So, but now I'm actually doing that. I'm using those two skills, honing in on interpersonal communications. And this is how old I am. In college, we got our first digital. I was doing editing, like where you splice the tape, you splice and you tape it. Like that's how we edited. And then we got our first digital editing system. It was called a Media 100. And it came to our university and no one knew how to use it. And I spent hours in that studio. I was so determined how to use this system that I was teaching the classes for my professors by the time I was in college, because this was such a foreign concept. So it is kind of funny how it's like come back around and now I'm editing again. And I'm also trying to use those interpersonal skills. It's very weird how that happened.
Mm-hmm. Hearing you say that you were learning how to do it and so you wound up teaching the class for the professor is maybe the most Jody statement I've ever heard, because when working either working professionally or in a volunteer capacity with Jody, if someone doesn't know how to get something done, you ask Jody. You do. You're like, Jody, how does this work? If Jody knows, she'll tell you. If Jody doesn't know, she'll tell you twice as well. Like, it's just the way it works. There's some magic to it.
I appreciate that, but and thank you, because I try to be of help, but I am learning too that is such a response to hyper independence that probably came out of years. Exactly. Like that hyper independence of, I'm not going to ask anyone for anything. I am just going to figure this out myself. And I'm going to go through all the steps and it's going to be painful and it's going to take it forever. And I don't care, because for some reason that feels easier than going to somebody else and saying, hey, can you assist me with this? And that is absolutely a trauma response. So while it's a good quality, it's also, if I'm being self-reflective, I'm learning that about myself, that I don't inherently trust people, or I don't feel comfortable enough getting assistance because that might make me seem weak or incapable. Mm-hmm. And none of that is true. And that is another thing that I'm starting to realize as I'm talking to more and more people. You know, in a way, I'm asking for help right now. I'm reaching out. I'm like, I need creativity. I need the tools that you use to get through these really difficult situations. I talked to somebody who just lost their pet, which I can't even imagine. We talked about body image, something I've struggled with my entire life. All these situations that I've kind of swept under the rug because I don't actually want to deal with them again, just this hyper vigilance, hyper independence. And I've realized that about myself. That's something I really need to work on, because people want to help. People love to help.
Yeah. It's super interesting to hear you describe that, because we try and steer away from day job kind of stuff, but what you're describing strikes me as something I struggle with startup founders all the time. They very much have that attitude of like, I can figure this out myself. I don't need any help. Like I will, it may take me twice as long, but at least I'll know how to do it kind of thing. And the sign for me that we're actually starting to get through to folks and develop the trust is what you just described. Like the second a founder comes to me and says, I don't know how to do this, or like, I need help doing something, I know that the process is working and that the trust is there. And that may be trauma-informed response. That may just be, you know, something else. But congratulations on coming to that realization that asking for help is not a sign of weakness. It's a positive sign of growth and the willingness to put yourself out there and trust someone else with that information. So well done.
Well, it's definitely a work in progress. That is for sure. But I do, you know, I don't know if it's just my age or what it is, but I'm starting to see these things. And if I'm being honest, I think that that's one of the things that contributed to my divorce, just to take it back full circle to where we started this conversation. You know, I was, I really liked being a wife. And so I did take care of everything in that household. And I don't know if I gave him an opportunity to step up and just contribute to the relationship in a way that he needed to for growth. Mm-hmm. And that actually is something I started to think about when I had the conversation with him, was just I am very overbearing. I come in and I'm like, I've got it all. Don't worry.
I love you so much.
Exactly.
Like, let me do this.
There will never be laundry. Dishes will always be. You know, like, it's crazy. But I will say too, when I was married, we used to talk about doing everything. I used to do these things called cookie parties. And they were,
I remember the cookie parties.
Cookie parties were a big deal. Every holiday, I would bake cookies all day long at my house live and have a party, make all this food, have all these drinks. Like 100 people would come in and out all day. I would start prepping these cookies in October, like mixing the batters and freezing the batters, like in just stacks in my freezer, so that by the time the day came, I could just bake. And I'm not exaggerating. It was about roughly 1,000 cookies every cookie day. But the interesting thing about these cookie days, they were pretty notorious. Again, I was like doing it all. The group of people that would come were so eclectic because I have a background in music. I worked in hip hop for a long time. I'm in a different industry right now, which is more tech-based industry that, you know, I work in. I have book club friends and wine club friends and just all these different groups of friends, and they don't usually cross, but on cookie day, everybody got together. And it was just all these different types of people with all these great personalities. And it was just so beautiful. But people often commented that the one thing Chelly, who was my ex-husband, and I got right, was that we had this ability to bring all these different types of folks together. And so one of the cool things I think about these friends interviews as I go through, that everybody's so different and they're all from like a different friend group. So backgrounds are different. Stories are so different. Family structure is really different, but we all have these same kinds of struggles regardless of what, where, or how we got to where we are right now. And that's also, I just think it's a really cool thing. And I feel so fortunate to have such an eclectic group of people around me. Even when I had my housewarming party at my new house, the folks in this neighborhood who I'd started to make friends with came and they were like, I can't even believe all they're like, it's such a cool, and it has nothing to do with me. I take zero credit. It's just that I am lucky enough to be in these friend groups with just these really diverse, amazing, wonderful people. So bringing everybody together was cool. And Cookie Day started it. I will all Cookie Day. So many good things came out of Cookie Day.
Mm-hmm. I love the thing I love most about this show is like guests like you will come on and offhandedly like drop something that like is an entire conversation. They're yeah. just like, you know, I was in hip hop for a while, whatever. And so I immediately go, wait a second, let's pause and back up. Like hip hop in Philly, hip hop elsewhere. Like what was that like and what drew you into that industry?
Okay, so that's a great question too. It was Philly hip hop. It was very localized. Okay. And I also did a lot in the indie rock scene here in Philadelphia. So I had a podcast for a period of time, worked on a magazine for a period of time. I did like media training, some management PR for a lot of the local hip hop artists here in Philadelphia. And that was like a good chunk of my life. It's a funny story how I got there though. I studied opera professionally for about 15 years. And so I was a singer, and it's actually one of the ways that I worked my way through college. I would literally sing the national anthem at games. I would get money that way. And then I would wash the uniforms after. So I worked in the
gym. I didn't know about the uniforms. Wow.
That was my co-working in university. I forget what they actually call it. So you get like your stipend. So I would get all the stuff, go on the
work
court.
Work study stuff. Yeah.
Work study stuff. I'd go on the court, sing the national anthem, go back, change. And then after the game, get all the disgusting uniforms from the basketball players and the wrestlers. And wash them and fold them for their next game. That was what I did in college.
Wow.
Very weird. I also detailed cars. That, I know. That's
something a cleaning theme.
She's very detail oriented.
But detailing cars, not to get on that tangent, that taught me everything I ever needed to know about sales. That's a whole other story. But so I was a singer. And I was in Philadelphia at the time and very bored one night. And I was on MySpace and I saw that this record label in South Jersey was looking for people to come in and do background vocals for an album. And so I reached out, and the person I reached out to, I ended up marrying. That was my ex. Huh. And so it happened to be a hip hop studio. We talked on MySpace. That's where we met. I never ended up singing. We fell in love. He moved in a month later, and the rest was history.
Huh. Interesting.
And then we started a company together, and we had that company for a very long time. And then when we got divorced, I decided that, you know, it was really his thing, and I was kind of ready to exit. So he's still very involved in the music industry now.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you.
It's weird, like opera to hip hop.
Yes and no.
I mean, you see that training. You can take it anywhere in the music world. Yeah.
Well, and also, like, one thing I think gets discounted about that art form is people see the sampling culture as stealing first, as opposed to like using other forms of creativity to inform your work. And so, like, I've always found like producers in that realm, and like, we're huge fans of Rick Rubin. Like, he does all kinds of random stuff. Like, he does comedy and he does country and he does, you know, classical. And so, like, I think there's something that is a very direct line for me between opera and hip hop. It's just like, yeah, that makes sense. Of course that would happen.
I mean, music is music at the end of the day, right? I always envied producers when I was working with them, and I just thought they are really brilliant people because they hear things that I am never going to be able to hear. The way that they take in music is fascinating to me, where they could sit there and listen, or in their mind hear multiple tracks playing at the same time. That is pure talent. And I'm not sure if you could teach that to somebody. You could teach somebody to press buttons, you know, on a machine. You could teach somebody to do that. But to hear it, to conceptualize what it is that you want to come out, that is a whole nother level.
I hate to tell you this, and you're right, it is a whole nother level, but you're already doing like the seeds of that with the editing of these conversations. It's just, you're hearing a different audio performance. It's not music, it's stories. So you are already doing some of that magic. Sorry, not sorry.
Listen, it is definitely scratching a creative itch. I can't deny that. And that was also something that was important to me. In fact, I even started voice lessons again because it got me kind of motivated to have more of a creative outlet. So that good is coming out of that part of it. And I won't deny that having an outlet for creativity is essential for somebody like me. So I appreciate that part of it for sure.
Right. As Rick noted, we got one of those answers that just makes everything, wait, why are we even having this conversation when we can have that conversation? And there are five other things that I have noted that we should talk to Jody about. But we're not going to have time to talk to Jody about all of those things because we've already been talking to Jody for the length of the show. We still have mildly interesting questions to ask her. So I'm just going to go ahead and assume that we're going to have Jody back on the show, because obviously we need to, because there are like other secrets that I know that haven't even been disclosed that will make Rick's head spin.
Cool.
So before we go down the mildly interesting question route, I want to give Rick one more, because this is exciting. We discovered earlier in the little pre-show chit chat, Jody and Rick obviously know one another existed because they have both been in my life. Jody has heard about Rick. Rick has heard about Jody. They've been in the same city at the same time, but I think this is the first time that the two of them have ever had conversation. So yeah. Rick, is there anything else that you want to ask Jody before we go down the closing pathway?
Yeah. Yeah. I think for my own edification, and this doesn't have to be a single response, but as a person who is trying to get better at this sort of thing, like, what is your favorite question as an interviewer, or like, what topics do you find generate the most interesting conversations for you at this point in time?
I think I'm still trying to figure out what topics are generating the most interesting conversations, but the question one, I think I can answer for right now. And the first one I stole from Tim Ferriss, I'll just be honest. Mm-hmm. And I think he actually stole it from someone, if we're really being fair.
Well, but it's Tim Ferriss. So yes, I think that's a safe assumption.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I don't know who to attribute the actual credit of this question, but I love it. And that is, what book do you gift to people the most?
Ooh.
I just love that question so much, because the answers have been all over the spectrum, and it's really fascinating. Mm-hmm. And the second question is asking people what they think they're an expert at. And that has generated some really fascinating answers, because I always think I know what they're going to say, and they never say what I think.
Yeah.
Hmm. Wow. That last one makes me want to curl up in a ball and cry.
It's a hard question to answer.
Yeah. Wow.
Maybe that's what you're expert at, curling up in a ball and crying. Maybe that's...
All right. Right? Jody and I do have a few things in common. That might be one of them. Let's dive into the mildly interesting questions. For those of you who have not been to this part of the show before, mildly interesting questions, I ask each guest the same four questions. And the fifth question is a bonus question that comes from a list of questions that Rick or I have previously asked one another. Before the show, we rolled Jody's special pumpkin spice latte colored dice.
Yes.
Die. Are you a pumpkin spice latte fan? Pumpkin spice, yay or nay? It's not one of the questions we're just asking.
Yay. For life. Yeah. I don't care what anybody says about the dangerousness of it.
ESL for life.
Which is the reason when I pulled this die out of the bag, I was like, oh, they knew that Jody was here today. Okay. All right. Question. Oh, we've already rolled the fifth question. It happens to be question number five. And I am so excited to ask Jody this particular question. It is the perfect Jody question. But we'll start with question number one. Jody, what is one habit that you would like to pick up over the next year?
I have to exercise more. Have to.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Would you rather know a lot about one thing or a little bit about a lot of things?
A little bit about a lot of things.
Okay. Question number three, all important. What do you need from the grocery store?
Coffee and half all the time.
Yes. Constant. Do you just have a list printed that says coffee, half and half, and then you can write the other ingredients below it? Yeah.
Yep.
Perfect. Yep. Would you like to survive the zombie apocalypse?
Absolutely not, because I will not find contact glasses.
Oh, you know what? We are three people who literally cannot see anything without contacts or glasses. I understand. I'm just going to start, like, I'm hoarding contact lenses.
I mean, this is what I think about the zombie apocalypse. Yeah. I will be able to see. And that is my biggest fear about it. So take me out. I'm tired.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
You and Tracy, our other Philly lovely guest, strongly feel no. No survival. Okay. Question number five turns out to be Where would Ferris Bueller and his friends go for a day off in your city?
God, there's so much to answer here. Okay. So I'm in Philadelphia, to be fair. We all know about the touristy things. So I'm going to leave those out for the sake of this because it's Ferris Bueller. What does he care about those? A tour of all of our beautiful, amazing murals in Philadelphia.
Oh, God, yes.
Best public art from out of any city. So that's an absolute must. We also have some of the best restaurants, and I am not talking about cheesesteaks. I'm talking about other food that is like world renowned that people need to try. Mm-hmm. But then at about 1 a.m., you go to the pretzel factory and you wait outside for the fresh, soft pretzels to come out of the machine. And you get your little dippers and you sit on the sidewalk in South Philly and you eat a hot, soft pretzel right out of the oven. And it's the most amazing experience you will ever have. Definitely have to do that. Also, Philadelphia is home to some of the most incredible music, and so much music got started here in Philadelphia. So going to see a live show, absolutely essential if you're coming to Philly. That's another thing. And then we have really cool places like Magic Gardens, amazing.
If you're from Portland, the Magic Gardens in Philly is nothing like the Magic Gardens in Portland. Don't get confused. It's not the same kind of venue. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. It is a mural,
a mosaic
started by a very famous artist here named Isaac, who just has this whole like village of mosaic pieces that you could walk through. But we also have really incredible art scenes. So there's this place like on the pier that you could go and visit artist galleries. There's First Fridays where you can just stroll along certain parts of the city, visit art galleries there. So that's, and I'm not sure if Ferris would be into that totally. But
he went to the museum. He can go to the galleries.
Museum. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg in Philadelphia. I think Philadelphia is one of the greatest cities in the world. We have so much here, music, culture, art. It's the only place that you can walk past Benjamin Franklin's grave, like literally say, hi to Ben, turn the corner and see like a mural done by the Roots. I mean, that's an exaggerated example, but that's how Philadelphia is. And that's pretty incredible.
Also, you can see William Penn's sword and tell what time of day it is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And by sword, we don't actually mean sword.
I mean, technically it's a sword, but.
Yeah.
I once had a great view of William's pen.
He stands at attention. Okay. If you have the right view in Philadelphia, you can see that.
Yeah.
Jody.
Yes.
You've been an exemplary guest. Have fulfilled everything that I could have hoped for, and then some, and then some was one of the things I could have hoped for. So, and then some, and then some. And I have been so delighted and pleased to have you here today. I'm so jazzed that I finally got a chance to have you and Rick in a conversation together, because I just think the both of you are super swell. And I appreciate you coming and joining us today, because you are far more interesting than almost anyone I know. Rick, would you like to wrap up the show with a little bow and thank Jody for her time?
Of course. Yeah. Again, like to just reinforce what Cammy just said, we could have gone on for hours and hours, and we will definitely need you back because, yeah, we were both jotting down notes about like, wait a second, that could be a super interesting tangent to go down. And while I appreciate you taking the opportunity to improve your listening skills and be a better listener, I could sit and listen to you for hours and really appreciate you taking the time to share those parts of your life that you may not think are terribly interesting, but like we definitely find wildly interesting. So we really appreciate having you here. Definitely having you back. We probably need to do a Philly love episode at some point to just let people jam on that subject, because that's clearly something.
Can we just go to Philly to record that, because I miss Philly so much. I miss Philly.
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah, but all in all, thank you for spending time with us. We really appreciate it, and we're already looking forward to having you back again. So thank you, Jody.
Thank you both so much. This was really fun. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. And hey, thank you for watching or listening or however you're consuming.
Yeah, thanks for coming. And you're welcome to go about your day now. Go do something interesting and we'll catch up with you next time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'll be good. It'll be fun.
See you then. See you later.